All right, we are now calling together our special closed session for 5:30. The City Council Successor Agency, Stanton Housing Authority, special joint meeting of Tuesday, November the 22nd at 5:30 p.m. Is there roll call?
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Chairman Chopper?
Here. Is there anybody request either written or anybody here that would like to speak on our closed session meeting?
Mr. Mayor, Council, we have none.
Okay, that being said, we're going to recess into our closed session and we'll be back. At this time, I'm going to call to order the Stanton City Council Successor Agency Housing Authority joint regular meeting of 6:30 on November the 22nd. Madam Clerk, roll call.
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez?
Here.
And Mayor Chairman Chopper?
Thank you. If you'd all please join in our pledge. Jennifer, would you please lead us tonight?
Would you please join me in celebrating the flag of our great nation?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, tonight we have no special presentations. We'll move on to the consent calendar. All items can be taken in one motion at this time. Does anybody want to pull anything?
Mr. Mayor, before we do that, would you like to report out a closed session?
Of course not.
No.
Because we didn't do anything. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. That's
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, now we'll move on to consent. Was anybody asked to pull anything?
I'd pull mine.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?
I'll make a motion on the balance.
I'll second
it. Okay, before we do that, did we receive any, besides any comment, was there any written communications that we got?
Mr. Mayor, we did not receive any.
Okay, perfect. All right, go ahead.
All right, so 9G is about the resolution approving and adopting amended conflict from Act of
74, a couple of years ago.
So I know that the purpose of...
Excuse me, Alice.
Yes.
Point of order. Didn't we have a first and a second on the a balance?
We did. We need all in favor?
Yes, please.
Any opposed? Hearing none, all items on the consent calendar pass, except for item 9G, which was pulled from the consent calendar for separate discussion. Ms. Van, please continue.
Great. Okay. So I just wanted to... for it to be struck from the document, anything, and Stanton Foundation. Another purpose of the appendix on page 1, city affiliated entities, which the foundation is not. So, that's it with you guys. I 113. Yeah, so, I'd like to strike. Stanton, can you?
Ms. Van? So, do we have a motion on item to approve the Conflict of Interest Code, item 9G, as well as resolution number 2022-44, with the recommended striking of any reference to the Stanton Community Foundation by Council Member Van. Do you have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, item G passes.
Thank you. Okay, that ends our consent calendar. Public hearings. Item 10A. I believe that will probably be Jennifer, right?
Actually, yes, correct. This is the urgency ordinance amending section 20.400.330 of the Stanton Municipal Code regarding accessory dwelling units and junior accessory dwelling units and determining the ordinance to be exempt from CEQA. Ms. Lilly.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Tonight, the ordinance before you is to really bring our ADU ordinance into compliance with the recent changes to state law. Staff has also taken this opportunity to make some minor changes, things about our ADUs in the front yard, where we have some flexibility to make that kind kind of a last location of choice. If there are other locations on the property where the ADU can go, we have put into the ordinance that it would go there prior to being in the front yard. We can't exclude them from being in the front yard, but we can add some of that nuance. There was also a provision that required view obstructing windows, and we've changed that over time to be using landscaping and other design features to ensure privacy, and that not having looking in from one unit to another. The view obscuring window really creates a quality of life issue for the folks that live in the unit where they're not able to get fresh air, fresh light in through those windows. So we found other design features. So just those few minor nuances, but overall this ordinance is really to fall into compliance with state law and keep us up to date. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'll turn it back over to you.
One of the biggest concerns that I had was, of course, with the infrastructure related to electrical, plumbing, or sewer system, and water. As you know, a lot of the areas of the city are built out. In our particular agreement, I know we lost almost all local control, but is there anything we can do to make sure that we're not overbearing or overworking any of those three very important systems to residential areas? And how are we going to manage that?
So, Mayor, members of the council, that's a great question. It's one that professionals all over the state are asking. Unfortunately, at this time, there is no way to evaluate and use that as a means to not allow accessory dwelling units. Instead, we would work with our professional team in Public Works and with our leadership to determine how we would improve infrastructure to accommodate all of this growth and change. So it's a little bit about working backwards after the fact, but that's really the best we can do, unless the city attorney has a secret silver bullet that we haven't discovered yet.
Mayor and Council, I will say I have not found any silver bullet. This is an issue that they have been dealing with for clients down the state. With similar concerns, unfortunately, the housing shortage, the message from the state is ADUs will be a part of the solution. It needs to be approved with limited oversight.
If I might be able to add, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, we have not seen a great influx as many other cities have, although we have reported to you the numbers that have increased slightly since state law has changed and our ordinances have changed to accommodate. Many other cities are seeing far greater development in ADUs than we've seen here in Stanton. So slower, incremental, and allows us to continue to look at our infrastructure and other solutions as you raise those concerns.
Yeah, what's said about that is, example, the Coastal Commission cannot overrule something, which is really sad. We also have concern with fire and our public safety issues, whether or not a fire truck can get into an area to accommodate more structures. It's pretty sad when Sacramento takes away local control of the public health and safety of the residents that elected us to make sure that our city is safe and habitable. I will continue to work with the group, League of California Cities, the ACCOC, and other groups that are trying to be an advocate to get some of this back so that we can continue to make our community safe. It's really sad, somebody sitting up in a desk in Sacramento, an assemblyman or a state senator, that's way up there, has no idea what our community needs are, and they probably don't even know who we are. But yet they're taking control of everything we do, and every month it's something else, something else, something else. And it's going to be a point of where pretty soon the state of California will run everything, including all local government. And I tell you, it's a road that has no end. It's a road of it's not going to be successful. And I hope someday the residents of this state and the city wake up and send a strong message to the people, leadership, that are making these ridiculous requests of us. Anyway, thank you for that. Any questions out of anybody on this thing? It does give us some leverage. We did make a few changes. Like if the street isn't wide enough for a fire truck to turn, we don't allow them in, right? I'm just teasing you. Some city actually found out that if the road wasn't wide enough, I think it was 25 feet, if it's not greater than that, it breaks the fire regulations. And so they can't build an addition in the back because an accessibility to it with a fire truck, it doesn't work out too well.
We actually were able, excuse me, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, we were able to add the provision, not utilizing a specific measurement, but instead the fire code as the restriction. So that did go into the last update that we did to our ADU ordinance. It's maintained in this update as well. So we do look for fire safety in that regard.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I'm just not sure if we're going to be able to get away with it, but I am very happy that it's there. So thank you. All right, any other questions? All right, is there a motion?
Motion.
Mr. Mayor, before we do that, if we can open the public hearing. Public comment?
Oh, sure. Would anybody in the public besides the fire department like to comment on this? Okay, Chief, you can comment if you like. I'm just teasing you. Okay. All right, I'll close our public hearing on this, bring it back. We do have a motion and a second.
Yep.
Go ahead.
All right, can we get that motion record again?
Motion.
He will now proceed with a roll call vote, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Schauer?
Yes.
Item passes 5-0.
Okay, thank you. All right, unfinished business. We have none. New business. 12A, Public Cable Television Authority Lease. City Manager.
Thank you. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the council. The Public Cable Television Authority, also referred to as the PCTA, is a joint powers agency representing the cities of Stanton, Fountain Valley, and Westport. Most recently, Fountain Valley has provided the PCTA with office space. Earlier this year, Fountain Valley issued the PCTA a notice to terminate the existing lease agreement. Subsequently, the PCTA board directed PCTA staff to identify potential office space within member cities or in the commercial market. The PCTA approached the City of Stanton inquiring about potential office spaces. The City identified the Dotson Park House as available upon the Council's approval for an initial term of 1 year. Tonight, the Council will consider authorizing the Mayor to enter into the proposed lease agreement at a rental amount of $1,200 per month. That concludes my staff report, and I am available to answer any questions.
Hours of operation?
I beg your pardon?
Hours of operation?
They're currently set at 5 a.m. to 6 p.m. with occasional after-hour specials.
There's some great benefit to this. Since we pay one-third of the rent, it was a good deal. But the best news is we get the money back anyway because we're the rentee. Also, it's nice to have somebody at Dotson Park during those hours, somebody actually present there. I think it will help with our security and also communication. That being said, though, I would like to introduce and have Mr. Rocha Lewis come up. He is our manager of our PCTA, of which Councilwoman Warren and I are on the board. Welcome, Lewis.
Production coordinator for the Public Cable Television Authority. I'm here to answer any questions.
Well, we'd like, maybe you can just give a little background of what you're anticipating with the facility there, how it's going to help the agency, and a little bit about the PCTA.
Certainly. PCTA has been started off as a regulatory agency for the combined cities of Huntington Beach, Fountain Valley, Westminster, and Stanton. Huntington Beach drew a few years ago. So the three remaining cities now combine and pool our resources to create local origination programming for our government access channels, so Channel 3 being here in Stanton, as well as Channel 3s in Fountain Valley and Westminster. We had been operating out of the Fountain Valley offices for a number of years. 2006, I believe, is when we first moved into the administration office. City is now hiring out more employees, so they need the office space back. That's why they've asked us to relocate, and luckily we found an alternative here in Dotson Park The home is actually much larger in square footage than we currently have in Fountain Valley. It will be a great benefit because it already has the two bedrooms essentially become separate offices, and we have a large family area that can become a small studio that we can use for voice work. We can also store all of our equipment in the office. So it actually comes out to very beneficial for PCTA to have a little more room to expand and lay out all of our equipment as opposed to the cramped confines currently have that are we vacating in Fountain Valley.
How big is your staff?
We currently have two, and I believe at the beginning of the year it'll be down to one.
Okay.
We are a fine tool machine.
Apparently.
Well, it's nice because we were looking at our budget, and we want to stay within our budget in the future. So we were able to combine the management aspects of the PCTA with Lewis, also with his honed-in skills for editing. We do also have contract editors that we're able to farm out to if we need them. Some of the production that we've done, tell us about the awards we've won, Lewis.
In the almost 14 years now that I've been with PCTA, PCTA has finished in first, second, or third place on at least 30 different productions, both regionally, the state level, and also nationally. We actually took home a couple of national awards for government and programming over the years. So again, there's about 30 some odd awards. The plaques and the statuettes are all in our offices. There's just no room to display them at right.
Cool.
We're small, but we're doing a great job. Go ahead, Alice.
As you may have noticed, if you've been to Dotson Park, parking is extremely limited here. Not just for your folks who are using that group tonight, but also for the residents who choose to come and visit the park, sometimes it's a challenge. How many people do you think are able to be using those stalls during the hours of 5 a.m.?
Predominantly, it will just be myself, the one employee, and then occasionally we'll have our crew come in and drop off and pick up equipment. Nobody will be operating out of the office except myself at pretty much for any extended period of time. As our crew, they're all independent contractor 1099s. They will come in, pick up, and drop off equipment, so they're in and out in less than 20 minutes most of the time. And during normal business hours, I've noticed that the parking spaces at Dotson Park are generally more open as opposed to later in the evening when residents come and start.
And I'm sure you've seen that building. It used to be, I think, a residential area. What sort of improvements or changes do you expect to be doing inside of the structure itself so that it can accommodate your needs?
It actually works fine for us as a home that we're going to be using as an office space. We won't be making any sort of changes to the structure itself.
You don't anticipate any improvements internally?
Not that I can think of.
I'll be honest, I did not expect for the building inside Dotson Park to be used as a rental area for PCTA. I had expected it to serve the community surrounding it, such as the community across the gardens, which is very high needs, low income community. So I know the lease is for 1 year. If the lease ends in 1 year, would you be able to leave and find another place to go if you had to use it for other purposes, such as creating a mini FRC or some sort of satellite office or other city programming?
As we're currently experiencing now in Fountain Valley, we will start the process all over again if in a year that city decides to not renew our lease. It's just a matter of finding the right space or the right price.
Lewis can move in 3 days.
Okay. So you only need 3 days' notice to call your staff and leave.
Ideally, a little longer just because of the transfer of services.
I'm just kidding. Alice, you can help him.
I have a question for the city manager. Obviously, equipment's going to be housed there. What happens if someone breaks in and takes equipment? What's the liability there?
The lease terms place all the liability on PCTA for any equipment. And so, walked the property, Mr. Rocha was made aware of that. He may want to secure some of the doors, depending on how.
Louis, we have our equipment. I think we do have some kind of an insurance policy.
We are fully insured, yes.
Fully insured for everything. That's what I thought.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Louis? Go ahead, Carol.
One thing is, since you're opening the park up when you get there in the morning, in case you have like a heavy workload and you're not going to be there to be able to open the park, could you give the city notice? So
absolutely. I plan on giving the city a schedule of when, what days of the week I will be there and which days I intend on not being there. And if any sort of issue arises where I won't be able to attend, I have hopefully contact within the city that can let them know that they can open the park for the public.
Any other questions? Okay, so the recommended action is to go ahead and make the findings and to authorize me to enter a lease agreement for 1 year. We're all okay with that? All right, I'm going to go ahead and make this motion, 12A, since I'm chairman of the PCTA, and I'd be happy to hear someone second.
Second the motion as a former chairman of PCTA.
Wow, okay. We need a roll call, right?
A voice would suffice.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, Louis, welcome to Stanton.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
We're welcome to have you here. We're happy that you're going to be over there. It gives us a little security, too. So stay in touch with our city manager. If there's some things we need to work out or some kinks or problems, we'll take care of it, okay? All right, thank you.
Thanks.
By the way, our neighboring cities are very happy that we were able to do this at the price. So we made a lot of our neighbors happy, at least Westminster and Fountain Valley. And we are out recruiting other cities right now. We're trying to expand if we can.
But also, in looking at other office space, the lease agreement is comparable with commercial market space. So.
We didn't give that such a good deal, so we're fair. Okay, we're now moving on to 12B. This is an amendment to the Stanton Municipal Code, Code Chapter 5.77, Commercial Cannabis Business. I bet that's you.
It's actually the city attorney tonight.
Oh, we're moving up a notch. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. As the mayor said, this is proposed amendments to Chapter 577, Commercial Cannabis. As you know, just a brief background, the city has a tax measure that was passed by the voters. It's a tax on cannabis businesses. Additionally, the city has a regulatory ordinance that was adopted in 2020 that regulates kind of from beginning to end applications to issues that may arise after. And then in 2021, we embarked on a journey to open applications, accept them, review them, score them, award them. And the expectation is that most of the committees are on the way to So during that process, that was implemented by the city, and there were a lot of lessons learned. So what you see here today are updates to Chapter 577 that implements one kind of gaps where the code can address something, or gray areas where it can be clear, or even best practices as we learn from other cities and other jurisdictions, what can we pull in to make things even better. The cannabis kind of implementation is constantly changing, it's becoming more complex, people are becoming more savvy. I'll go through some of the bullet points of what we did. So some of the new language addresses definitions, right? So we wanted to make things more consistent across the Stanton Municipal Code. We wanted to refer to state definitions that are being amended and evolving, so we wanted to capture that. We wanted to capture changes in the application procedure. For example, the current code provides for a non-refundable to cover the costs the city incurs. But what we learned was there are additional costs in the permitting process, and the questions that we get from permittees and applicants, for which we We're also proposing a refundable deposit so we capture it in the city pool. One of the items that we are proposing is that instead of having permittees find a location after they've been awarded a permit, to require as part of the application process that they enter into a letter of agreement with property owners, so that that is part of the application. We have an idea, one, of where those locations may be, and two, it kind of takes out some of the guesswork that we've seen some of the communities come on the backside. Then we have a couple of changes as well to review of the application, grounds for denial, background checks up to the application period so that we can see what is in their background. We added some grounds for denying a permit, expanded them, willful harming minors and issues with that. Streamlined issues related to renewals and appeals. The city did receive one appeal by an applicant who challenged the decision not to provide a permit. And we learned a lot during that process on how that could be more streamlined. And additionally, we made some adjustments to transfer and assignment of permits, given that the way permits are held, that could be by multiple owners, some who, for life circumstances, want to get out of that business or kind of change how it's held. So there's some, with the acknowledgement that we don't necessarily want people or applicants to get a permit and then sell the next day. So a lot of those checks and balances included in that approach. And just some updated general operating requirements, including, don't have marketing that's designed to appeal to children, and some code enforcement provisions that are explicit, that would already be required in the code, but are just explicit to these cannabis businesses, with the understanding that we want to be a community approach. We care that these businesses are not negatively affecting our community. So with that, I can questions, but again, this is just to streamline, update, clarify, and incorporate some best practices according to what we've learned in this past year.
I'll go ahead and start. Are the ones we have now grandfathered in?
Mayor and Council, no. There are some provisions that we specifically targeted towards our to discuss, at what point they have to renew. But otherwise, they are required to abide by public nuisance requirements, the operating requirements. I wouldn't say that they're grandfathered in.
If I could, for clarification, though, just to make sure that the audience and those listening might be clear, they are still permitted, and they would just go through the renewal process. So it doesn't kind of wipe the slate clean and start over. They are still our current permittees that then could go through renewal. But operating everything else, we're just adding and refining. So that I just wanted to kind of parse those two things apart.
And then if I recall, we asked them to tell us about their financials. But we never asked them to show proof of financials. We never asked them to show proof of the operations that they had. I think they just listed what they had or what their background was. So it was implied to me that during that process, people said they made X amount of money, but we never asked them for documentation of what they actually made or what their experience was. I think it's important in our new draft that we do have proof of income, that we know that they're making a certain amount of money, that we have a record of their successes, not that they have seven of them, the fact that they've actually had a business, because what's happening in this industry is they're getting money from other people coming in under their name, and then they're getting awarded the contract. So those are some of the things. Could you explain what our requirements are from a financial investigatory nature?
Absolutely, Mayor and Council. So just the existing practice, what we did end up doing is we were cognizant that one of the grounds for denial is, you know, if an applicant makes a false or misleading assertion. So we understood that as a city, there was really no internal expertise to be able to make that call. So as part of the process, as you may remember, the city contracted with HDL to do that additional step to look at them. HDL is they might have a monopoly, but they are certainly very embedded in the cannabis world, and they do a lot of ordinance drafting, kind of tax audits of a cannabis company. So they did take a look at, on the city's behalf, those permittees to see if there was false misleading items in terms of everything. And I believe that included kind of the business and financial aspect as well. So that's still a part of the city's process that we folded in. In addition to that, you know, in terms of the scale, the scoring scale, that is still in the city council's hands, right? Certainly in the next round, if, you know, as I anticipate, eventually there will be a next round. That score sheet could be kind of adjusted, and the expectations, the application could be adjusted call out more clearly, here's what you want to see in your application. Some of that is not codified in the ordinance, but just kind of put into resolutions or the guidelines. Certainly that's something that the city can ask for. Zilly had some.
I was just going to say, those things were not codified previously, and typically the city attorney's recommendation would be that we keep those specifics out so that you do have more latitude to adjust as you learn and grow. Once it's codified, then we have to keep coming back to make those changes. So you'll see that with sometimes our development applications, our building permit applications, and things like that, where you can ask for additional things without having to change your ordinance. So I think that this keeps in line with that, but certainly the direction from the council will be important.
My third point was, I was curious of why we would not want to go through and eliminate or make an open window where we could do this with a DDA, a development agreement with somebody that wants to come in and do the business. If we did a development agreement, we could set our own terms, our own location. We could do what's best at that time, and we wouldn't have to sit here 3 years later waiting for something to happen. Through no fault of our staff, it was the fact that we had so much changeover in this department over the years when we tried to start this project. To me, the only thing danger about having a DDA is a CEQA challenge. That would be probably the only downfall to it. But you know, I would really be interested in maybe pursuing having a development agreement with somebody that wants to come in and do business here like any other business. Would you like to comment on that? Thank you.
So in terms of DAs, development agreements, those are long-term agreements that cities can enter into. Typically, in what I've seen in terms of working with public agencies, they either have a development agreement kind of process, which is less and less now as cities have come on and brought in a tax measure. So typically the tax measure would replace that, given that there is a structured voter-approved measure to gain those, you know, public benefits. I believe that, you know, we set a range, propose it to the voters that tax could go up to a certain amount. I don't think that Stanton is asking for the maximum. So certainly if, you know, the city wanted to try to capture more tax, we could, you know, that could be increased up to the voter approved. Yes, typically for cities that have a tax measure that has been approved, such as Stan, that has been the way that the city has gone.
Thank you.
We're anticipating one or two coming on board in 2023, is that?
We are. We have two that have pulled permits and are moving forward. The third looks like they are close to pulling permits, so we anticipate early 2023.
Any other questions? Jennifer, picking your brain, what would be the advantages and disadvantages to having a development agreement with drug dealers?
I think the city attorney's outlined a number of communities that we've spoken to have moved away from the development agreement process. I think that there are advantages and disadvantages, but I think your process is fair. I think there's lots of ways to be able to bring in the income, and I think the council should look at that as you're moving forward and actually start to see the income come in. If there is a different advantage in a DDA, I think we, or sorry, in a DA, I think we have some legal concerns that we want to look at when it comes to having a tax and a DA, and just making sure that we're following an equitable process. So at some point, the council may need to determine whether they abandon one and go with another. So I'm not so certain that you will find a DA gets you a better advantage. Other cities use a conditional use permit process. They use other tools, but I think you have the tools in place to be very successful.
If we did a development agreement with someone and we stayed within the guidelines of our tax that was supported by the voters in that area, that would not create a legal issue with it if we followed the guidelines of the voters.
Mayor and Council, the tax measure was very detailed. It provided not only, you know, the potential tax rates, but it provided the methodology for how it would be imposed by square footage, so on and so forth, audits, how it would be collected. So, I mean, with the development agreement, it fell within that rubric. I think I want. Want to highlight what the community development director noted, that with the regulatory ordinance, it does set forth a level playing field on how people can apply. So I think that is probably a big difference. Just one note on development agreements that I have kind of heard ripples lately is that, sometimes there are promises made and promises not kept. And so that has generated a good amount of litigation in some of cities I'm aware of where they've had to go out and try to get that contractual development agreement. Whereas, like I said, with the tax, there's mechanisms for the tax collector to get at that, which are a little bit more streamlined versus this kind of going to the court and saying, here's the agreement. Okay. So there are complications.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, if I could, this is my opportunity to pat our city on the back. And although we talked about in the preview of this item an appeal that was filed, you'll recall that appeal was withdrawn. And we are still, in my knowledge, the only city that's operating cannabis or will be operating cannabis that didn't go through litigation. I always knock on wood when we say that. But I think one of the reasons for that is because our process was very clean and clear and deliberate and didn't have a lot of ambiguity. So not only did we only have an appeal filed but then withdrawn, we didn't suffer litigation, which is so much time and cost to cities, and all of our other jurisdictions around us have suffered that consequence.
Well, if there was any ambiguity, it might have been in the scoring process. To me, after reviewing the scoring process, I think that's something that could be improved on greatly. I think that was something that was a consideration. There were some things that were scored there that didn't make much sense to me, and there was not much responsibility for financial documentation early on. I mean, the bottom line is why do we have cannabis? We have cannabis to get tax dollars so that we can provide services for the city. If that's not our number one priority and who we hire or we give a license to, then I don't think we're doing our job. If they're friendly and they want to give charity to our charitable groups, oh, that's great. if they want to come in and do other things in the city. They have a beautiful sales office. Who cares? The bottom line, guys, is you have cannabis so you can raise taxes so you can pay the city services. That's the reality of it. You know, if you're looking at it any way different than that, you know, I don't think that's right. And so to me, if we don't have a grading system that takes a look at the financial stability and the experience of the people that we hire, then I think we're going to end up with maybe some problems. The future will tell of how we did. But I think we could do a lot better than maybe we've done in the past. So I'm very pleased to see that we're upgrading at this time.
If I may, we wanted to make more clear the review criteria for which an application would be scored. And that is done, that could be done in a resolution, it's not in this ordinance. But we did flag a couple of items that are new here. It said the following general criteria shall be used to rank applications, but not limited to previous adult use retail experience that was subject to state cannabis regulation, longevity and profitability in other jurisdictions which the applicant operates a cannabis business, and community engagement in terms of a provision of providing benefits. So we were hearing kind of what was percolating during 2021 in the comments. We did want to acknowledge that, yes, we've heard that. Let's put a bigger emphasis on more background experience operating cannabis.
Those are two very key things. I'm so glad that that's there because it's going to protect us. You know, if you have somebody that's not experienced and doesn't make any money, is that somebody we want in the community? You know, we want successful businesses here. Unfortunately, I don't think these are the kind of businesses that we are responsible to make successful because they're unique. And they bring that uniqueness with them, and we need to know what they can do to benefit us. And so I think that if we make those changes, it protects the interests of our city. Any additional comments or questions? I don't want to embarrass him, but Mr. Wren, you kind of heard what we're talking about tonight, and I know that you were actively involved in the process, and I'm sure you've shared that with our attorney and also with the city manager. I'd like to hear some things that you might want to suggest that would make it easier on your staff and also make this process a more successful one.
And before Mr. Wren responds, I'd just like to share that the updates to the code were reviewed by Mr. Wren and Chief.
Okay, good. If you don't mind, madam, I'd like to, maybe if it's okay if you just, I like, because you know, he was the one that was spent his vacation time.
And I just wanted to share, this wasn't the only
option. Yeah, I know, I understand that, but I think it's also to somebody that's actually had these things in front of him. It's like, you know, he was behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mr. Wren.
Mayor, members, council, the process, to be honest, I think the key comment made by any staff member this evening related to the process was by Ms. Lilly, related to the fact that we had one challenge that was withdrawn and nobody else sued us. My experience in this area is that this can be a very lengthy process that goes on for multiple years and costs cities an extremely large amount of money. So as far as the process goes, I think that shows that it was done in an equitable manner. My experience related to the financials, they were provided. They were quite extensive, and then also utilizing HDL as essentially as a clearinghouse in that area. Obviously, we rely on them, and my understanding is that they're known as the industry standard in that area. I think there's, as the city attorney acknowledged, mentioned that moving forward, there's always opportunities to improve the process. Perhaps, I think the process was fantastic. Some of the individual steps, maybe the score sheet could be improved. There could be more clarity provided to the applicants related to the score sheet going into it. Other than that, there was a massive amount of data. And I think the key point related to all of the applications is that the the vast majority of the ones that made it to us as staff for review were extremely high quality. All of these packages were put together by consultants. This wasn't a term paper written by a guy to hope to open his first marijuana shop. I mean, these are high-end outfits. You know, say if take the top 25 of those we reviewed, there, to be honest with you, if you took number 25, you would look at it and be impressed with the application package. They were all very professionally done. There were a couple that you could tell the applicant fell for using the same consultant as some of the other folks, and they cranked them out on a boilerplate and changed the name. But other than that, the products that were presented, the clearinghouse effect by HDL, I think we are going to have qualified people to operate these. Obviously, there's things to be worked out as we move forward and they open and they operate, but I think a lot of the responsibility moving forward can fall on my department in terms of having communication with these folks and making sure that the impact on the community is what we intended. Also moving forward, even in advance of some of the building and just improvement of the area, Monroe and the quote-unquote green zones look exponentially better already, just from people cleaning up the area in advance of what's coming, or even potentially realizing what's coming, and they want to clean up their area to make it attractive to those that may or may not be looking to purchase property. So I see it as all of those are wins.
You know, HCL was brought in as an afterthought. We actually brought them in after we got through the process. Did you find that that was a good thing, and should maybe we have done that earlier on? Or do you feel with the reforms that we're making that we will be okay to maybe have that as an oversight? How do you see HCL's role? And I know that we did do it towards the end to give us a little blanket of security maybe, but how did that work and how do you see that in the future?
I would say from once it got to my, quote unquote, in my hands, and there were also two other individuals that participated in the review process, it didn't really matter at what point, because it happened before us, so it didn't really matter at what point it happened. By the time it got to us, they were vetted out through HDL, and then we were also provided financials of the individuals or of the corporations, what have you, in the application package. So as far as HDL, the timing of it, that's once it got to us, it was good to go, I think. Other way?
Yeah, one of the other things, too, was I was very, I didn't like the idea that we ended up with additional costs at the end. And I would like to see that anybody that wants to make a business of it, that there is a fee for it that's non-refundable. I think that most cities have a fee for people that are applicants. And I understand that we did not have anything set in that area. To cover the cost, it seems like we were actually, did we have to go back and ask for additional funds or something? How did that work out?
Mayor and Council, there was a non-refundable fee for each applicant to pay. That was adopted by the City Council to cover staff time, cost, materials, and it was, as I understand it, the city's best estimate at that time. Never gone through an application process like this before. Following that, did want to ensure that we had an outside consultant second look just to make sure that the background, there was nothing in the background that the city missed, so we brought on HDL and updated, was brought to the city council to approve that, and that was also passed on by the applicants. So there continues to be a non-refundable fee required as part of this package. That the resolution should come back to the city council, incorporate everything that we've learned, all the time, cost of materials, it should be higher. In
addition, we also are proposing as part of this draft a refundable deposit that would be $10,000 that the city can draw from. And when your application or permit is wrapped up, we will fund you what is left. But we don't want to put money in there, lose money. We want to make the city so we're looking toward that two-step approach.
Isn't there some intrinsic cost that we could also recover? My thought is that it's not like you pay X amount of dollars for city services because we can't make a profit under the law when we provide it. But isn't this a different category that we could possibly, in other words, charge a certain rate even though the actual cost of the service isn't? It's below that. I mean, to me, I think we can do that, but I don't know for sure. I just thought I'd ask you.
Mayor and Council, I can, as we put together a new resolution to bring to Council, we can look into that, certainly. Historically, we have just put forward time cost of materials at cost. We have, the city has not sought to profit off of this, given that we have a tax measure taken that cost, but certainly that cost as high as possible can.
Yeah, well, the reason I say that is because there are costs that we're not aware of yet. Could be public safety, law enforcement, code cleanup. The impact of businesses in a community, you never know what that impact is going to be. I'm not just saying this. So if there's a way in which we can take a look at what those feasible costs are as we go through the process now, those could be added in the initial application cost so that the city's not out any money. Because if it creates a problem to where it impacts cost to the city, whatever it is, we should be able to have that, and that should be a variable that we use when we come up with initial costs for an application. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Any other staff things that we like? Okay, thank you guys, you did a great job. I think part of the problem was that during this time there was such a change in the departments that were handling this. It was like a slippery football, who's got it? It was moving around. So I want to commend you on finally getting us to where we are now. I know it was a struggle. It's been a long time coming, but I think that at least we know what we did wrong. We made the corrections, and I think moving forward, we're going to be very successful. So, Jim, thank your staff. Jennifer, please thank your staff for that. Appreciate it very much. Okay, the action that we're going to take on this is that we are going to go through the first reading of this ordinance, which we're going to do, and we're going to clarify our positions, come up with some new practices, processing, permitting, and regulating. So, if there's no other questions on this, is there, this is not public hearing, right? Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll move it.
Okay. All in favor of updating the amendment?
Mr. Mayor, we'll have to proceed with the roll call vote.
Of course you can. Go ahead.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yep.
Councilmember Vann?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Shaver?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, item number 13 is oral communication. At this time, anybody from the public may address it on anything within our subject matter jurisdiction. You're limited to 3 minutes. Have we had any requests to speak?
I have none.
Okay, is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the public hearing. No written communications. Mayor initiated business. Our chairman, council, authority, or council members? Okay, 15, Mayoral Council Agency, that's the other one. Announcements. Go ahead, Alice.
So, we attended the Harvest Dinner for the Boys and Girls Club this past Sunday. Fantastic event. I think it was a good job. Fundraising for the children across the street.
Yes, that was a fun evening.
And thank you, the mayor, for his generous bidding of the mystery bag from Santa.
That's because somebody gave me a glass of wine that I never drink. It was so that I would buy that. It was a plot. Okay, yeah, we did have a wonderful evening there. I do want to thank Jim Wren, who saved the day Saturday. I lost the keys to the bathroom in the park. I haven't found them yet, Azania, but I will. We had 250 volunteers, and we served 6,000 people, and we gave away 40 pallets of food. And I want to thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to do that. We're one of the few cities that is able to still do that. Our next one is going to be on December 17th. It'll be our Christmas extravaganza, and then I'm going to retire until next year. It's kind of fun to do that because you see people that are very wealthy and their Lexuses pull up, but then for every one of those, you see 25 cars that are they're pushing them to get there to get their products. So it's a warm feeling because there are a lot of people in our communities and neighbors that really need the food. I'm very pleased to say that we were one of the few cities that had protein. We gave away Korean ribs, short ribs. We gave away 700 chickens, and we gave away a lot of turkey. So it was a good day, and I tell you, having the scouts, the little brownies throwing these bags in the cars, it's very heartwarming to see that they're learning how important it is to give and to be charitable. And the scouts that we have that help us are awesome people, as well as the many churches that we affiliate with. And so, Zania, thank you for letting me use your park. It's great. I appreciate it. Okay, moving on. Any other announcements? Okay, anybody want to initiate something for a future meeting? Okay, anybody want to have a future study session? We're gonna find out about what Zinni has been up to, because she has some exciting things for us. So go ahead, Zinni, before I turn it over to the big wigs on the right.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We are celebrating our Christmas tree lighting, our kickoff to the holiday season, next Thursday, December 1st. It'll be here, right in front of the Civic Center, 6:30 p.m. We have a very special guest from the North Pole that will be arriving, and we are celebrating again. Holidays around the world, some cookie decorating, and a generous donation by Starbucks for coffee and refreshments. Look forward to seeing everybody there. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you. We're having our Home Depot. We're giving those trees away. I think it's December 8th. So Cecilia is going to contact you to let you know, so we'll all get there for the picture when we give the trees out. Okay, well, you know, my calendar's so messed up.
Is that
up.
The right now?
Okay. Okay, well, it's whenever Alice says it is, because she keeps track of everything. Okay, that'd be great. All right, so I expect everybody there. Christmas tree lighting will be, I think it starts at 6:30?
6 p.m.?
6:30, right?
Yes, so the access at Cedar right here will close at 6 p.m. and the event will start at 6:30.
Okay, and we'll have the same program basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did you tell them about the new stuff we got? Come on.
So we did get some new wreaths, if that's what we're talking about. Okay, and also I did forget to thank Public Works for their hard work. They're setting up all the festivities out front and putting up with our, you know, demands and standards to get it right. We appreciate everybody's help.
Yes, we finally got new wreaths. I got those from Sam's Club when we went out of business. They were $15, the big ones. And we got some really good wear and tear out of them, but I think the new ones are really going to bring everything back. In the future, we'll also be looking, when our squatty little tree at Stanton Park begins to flourish, we'll maybe move it over there. But it still looks like Charlie Brown's tree, so we're not going to do it. Okay, now we're going to hear from our esteemed attorney. Okay, and our esteemed city manager.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the council. Tonight, I will be tag teaming with management analyst Jason Huyn to provide tonight's presentation on the purchasing policy and procedure. So at this time, I'll ask that our presentation be shown on the screen. And Jason's joined us at the podium. And I'll turn it over to Jason to begin.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of City Council. I will be presenting the first half of our purchasing policy review and updates. So when we drafted this update, our goal was to strengthen the policy guidelines so that we continue to efficient, cost-effective, high-quality goods and services in today's operating environment. Just to kind of give you an overview of the presentation, start off with the background, the general overview of the policy itself, then cover the removed section, which I removed either defer other administrative policies, or just to clarify procedures. Next would be the updated sections, where we reinforce and expand upon sections in the policy. And then there are some new sections where we are going to memorialize some of our existing practices that just weren't covered in the current policy. And finally, we will have a discussion on the purchasing authority, specifically the purchasing authority and the fine. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is the background. I just wanted to start off with the authorities that strain our purchasing policy. So the Santa Municipal Code has chapters 2.56, which is the purchasing chapter, and 2.58, which is the public project chapter. Specifically, 2.58 was adopted so that the city can sign on to the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, also known as CUPCA. There is the city's, the California Public Contract Code, section 2204, and of course, other ordinances adopted by the council. And then just to kind of give you some dates on like the update history. So the purchasing policy was adopted in 2007. And since then, there hasn't really been many updates. All of them have been minor adjustments to dollar thresholds, as well as to add, find the local vendor practice. But really, there hasn't been a comprehensive update to the policy. Next slide, please. So here is the table of contents of the draft policy. Start off with the introduction, general information. Then we go into the types of purchases, you know, goods and services. And then we have two different sections, methods of purchasing and procurement. I know those two sound the same, but really the methods of purchasing is the financial instrument, so purchasing PAL card, voucher, purchase order. And then the procurement procedures are your solicitation, whether it's open market or competitive. Then have the section on contract management, which is everything from finalizing the contract to any amendments, change orders, or extensions. And then the last section before the appendices is receipt and inspection. That is any sort of fixed assets, equipment. Want to make sure that we document all of our major purchases of goods over 5,000. So there are only a couple of types of purchases. We have the goods and services projects. Services are divided into non-professional, professional services. Non-professional is your general maintenance, low-skilled labor. And then professional services are anything that's licensed, skilled, contracts. So you have goods such as office supplies, furniture, vehicles. Non-professional services can include painting, plumbing, cleaning. And professional services could be ranging from an accountant, an architect, to an environmental consultant, so forth. And the public projects, anything CIP. There is a fifth category that is not up there, which is real property. And real property is not really governed by the purchasing policy. It's a separate process, which is why I left the office. So the purchasing policy really is a cycle of really three major steps. First, council obviously adopts the budget, and then that provides direction for staff to follow the procurements based on the appropriations. And then finally, we have the staff-led contract management. And as you can see, there's five bullet points there where project manager, head, finance department, independent auditor. There's a lot of internal controls to make sure that we are maintaining our vendor relations and ensuring contracts are brought out. So we have the solicitation types. Wanted to better define them in this draft policy. The first two, requests for information and the request for professional qualifications, are your sort of preliminary solicitations to help define the scope of work or identify qualified vendors. And then we have two different types, the RFP and then the RFQ/RFP. The RFP is separate because that is primarily based on qualification as the selection criteria, whereas requests for quotes or bids have cost as the main defining factor. Right. So these are the procurement procedure types, from you know the most high level to the most over-the-counter purchasing is for routine purchases, very low cost. Open market bid is where we try to get, you know, at least three quotes so that we can have a informal bid. And then we have the request for proposals and the competitive bid are for part of our big ticket items. Later on, when we talk about the purchasing authority, that was where we'll cover the threshold between very low and low cost. But now these are the types. Next slide, please. So these are the removed sections. These two, the credit card usage and the disposal of city property, are actually covered in other administrative policies. So we wanted to avoid confusion, any sort of contradiction. So one's deferring to the purchasing card policy and program guide. The other is to our fixed asset policy. Competitive bid negotiations. In our current policy, there was a small section on giving every reasonable and responsive bidder an opportunity to negotiate. This is not standard practice. Competitive bid is meant to be very straightforward with no negotiation. So we remove that to resolve any sort of liability concern if you have a non-competitive bid to begin a competitive bid. Next slide.
Can I ask you a question? Have we put, we built in a percent awards for local businesses when they submit their bid? Do we have anything like that built in yet?
Not for the competitive bid process, but we do have a local vendor preference policy that Jason and Tara made.
Can't we? I thought we could put it in a competitive bid once or if they're local, if we so desired.
I understand that for competitive bid, there is potential legal challenges with including a local preference.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
For the emergency procurement, we kept the process largely the same. We did remove a reference to $25,000. And really, that's just so that we can align it with the city manager's general purchasing authority. So this is not really a major change or removal. It's just to for consistency purposes.
Question on that.
Oh, go ahead.
So the city manager's general purchasing authority, is that capped at a certain amount? Is that $25,000
as well? So we'll show you in a later slide what it is in general. We just thought it was confusing to have one amount called out here and then one amount in general, so we just thought everything should align under that one amount. We'll define later, and that's actually one of the main points that this discussion?
Are we going with renewable or are we going with the mulch composting?
I believe the standard is set at 8%, and so it can be any combination of them. But for more details, I have to defer to our public works director or our engineering consultant, MSW.
And go ahead. As you probably know, most cities meet this requirement through their waste management provider.
Yeah, I think probably because we're fortunate to have a digester in Paris that we work with, is probably because purchasing natural gas is very, very expensive. It would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think composting is impractical because you have to pay to get it there, then you have to pay to have it taken away. So I think probably if we can get them to take over the bulk of the costs, if we get away not paying anything, I think that'd be a really good thing for. And that's what I hope we're able to work out.
Yes.
Okay.
So the contract section.
So one of the problems with that is it looks like a lot of times you have a pot of money that's being spent over a three-year period of time. However, it looks like our budget is increased cost for the same thing that's already been allocated previously because we haven't spent it. So when you make that presentation, if you can determine which of those things are carryover, and so that we know that each year that it's being spent, but the money originally was allocated at one time earlier on, I think that makes it easier for us to understand where we are in the budgetary process. Thank you.
Can you come back one real quick? I'm sorry. Whether they should remain active. Active as in with the same entity or just not?
It's not even that. It's sometimes we have
a very specific definition
and a way we
carry over. So if there's a lot of money in it,
but not necessarily tied to a contract, you don't then get to double that pot or add it to the next year's allocation. That is no longer active. Even if you haven't expended the full amount in that fiscal year, that is now closed and done. You get a new pot, but you don't get to carry over necessarily what was left over from the prior year. So that's what we were trying to get at.
Great, thank you.
That's right, is that accountability?
So I can give you a recent example. Last meeting, community development brought to what we're referring to as MSAs for our planning and building services, where we entered into contracts with both CSG and so they basically went through the same RFP process where there was an open call to all firms interested in working with the city. Jennifer and Caesar reviewed those applicants, reviewed all the proposals, and then from them they ranked and then selected the two most highly qualified. We entered into two agreements with them. There's no commitment with either one that will expend a minimum amount of money, and then now that gives us the freedom, depending on the type of projects that come in, the type of expertise that we're looking for, so that within that stable of those consultants, we can pick and choose, and we can even send out a scope of services and get kind of mini bids that run. Here's what our cost would be to do that. So it gives the city more flexibility, more choice, and it keeps it very competitive. And it saves time because you kind of do it once every 5 years, have your stable consultants do it again the next 5 years.
Got it. Thanks.
Versus the standard contingencies, there are times where, you know, a
tag team in here to begin the discussion for the purchasing authority. So as we go through these slides, you'll notice that the original purchasing authority that we're currently operating under, most of those limits have not been updated since 2001. So the current purchasing thresholds, and this is related to the procurement procedures that Jason talked about earlier in the presentation, are set at the following thresholds. For all purchases except for public projects and professional services, less than $3,000 is considered an over-the-counter purchase, and that was last updated in 2011. And then anything between $3,000 to $20,000 right now does an open market bid. So that's where we have to go get free informal quotes. It can be at the website, calling a vendor, asking them for a bid. And greater than $20,000 requires a competitive bid, so RFP. For public projects, Jason mentioned we follow under the state's CUPCA rules. So less than $60,000 are considered over-the-counter purchasing, between $60,000 and $200,000 are open market bids, and greater than $200,000 is a competitive bid. Now, the purchasing authority means at what level a purchase can be approved or signed off on. So for all purchases, department heads currently have authority to sign off up to $3,000. That was last updated in 2011 to that amount. The city manager can sign off on contracts or purchases between $3,000 and $20,000. That was last updated in 2001. And the council must update or, must approve anything greater than $20,000. Again, that was last updated 20 years ago.
So city manager cannot approve something under $3,000?
They can. That was poorly written. Thank you for pointing that out. So the challenges we face in the current operating procedure, and you can imagine this year we've seen an increasing spike in inflation in the cost of goods, but over 20 years you can imagine how that's compounded. So the city's current purchasing authority thresholds, most of which were set in 2001, give the staff reduced purchasing power in today's day and age. So what that causes is decreased efficiency and productivity due to the administrative overhead. So there's a lot of effort and work that goes into preparing a request for a proposal or a request for bid. There's a lot of work into following each of the steps that are currently required. And you'll see later on some of the types of purchases that the council may choose to authorize to be approved at a lower level are not complex, are not substantively difficult, and are things that are really routine and required for daily operations. So one of the things that we'd like you to consider is potentially increasing those signing authorities and procedures for procurement. So we wanted to give you some information to consider. Oh, there we go. Okay. So we wanted to give you an opportunity to compare with what some of our local cities are, just to put it into context. So we looked at cities that responded to our request for information and also wanted to make sure we picked some neighboring cities as well, including Garden Grove and Fountain Valley. And also wanted to look at cities who had updated their purchasing policy more recently. Right? The oldest one there you'll see is Placentia in 2008. So this is the purchasing threshold. This is the procurement procedure they're required to use, not signing authority. So you can see it ranges from a low of Placentia of less than $2,500 for basic, easy, over-the-counter purchasing, all the way up to Laguna Beach, which is anything under $30,000. And then you see most of them kind of lumped around that $3,000 to $5,000 range. For open market bid, you see it ranges from a low of $2,500 again in Placentia, but their range goes up to $25,000, up to a really high range of Laguna Beach, $30,000 to $75,000. And then you can see the threshold for requiring a competitive bid. Low end of that is Stanton at anything over $20,000, up to a high of anything over $75,000.
Doesn't state law regulate competitive bid costs?
For CUPCA, it does. For public projects, not for the other types.
So you're talking about
other
projects.
Yes,
okay.
I'm sorry, correct. This is not related to public projects.
Okay.
And the next slide gives you a comparison with our local cities with signing authority. So now this is whether it's at the department head level, city manager level, or council level. Again, you can see in the first column for department heads, it ranges anywhere from a low of Stanton at $3,000 to a high of Laguna Beach at $30,000 for department head signing authority. For the city manager, it ranges from a low of $3,000 to $20,000 at Stanton to a high of $30,000 to $75,000 at Laguna Beach. City Council, again, anything greater than $20,000 at Stanton, up to a high of anything over $75,000 at Laguna Beach. And of course, this is just a sampling. If we did, you know, all of the 400 plus cities in California, we would see a spread across the spectrum. Some are even less than we are, some are even higher than Laguna Beach, and a lot are in the middle. So for the purchasing threshold analysis, we actually looked at more cities than we included on the slide, because we wanted to just include what was comfortable to see in a reasonable font. But we looked at what we have currently at the city of Stanton, and then we applied an index inflator to that just to see, hey, if we had kept up with inflation since they were last updated, whether it was 2001 or 2011, what would that look like today? Then we also provided you with the average of nearby cities. And then in the final column, we provided a staff recommendation of what we are proposing for the council to consider. So for over-the-counter purchasing threshold, this means we don't have to follow any kind of competitive process. We're recommending any purchase less than $5,000 and one penny. So basically less than $5,000 or less. For open market bid with the three informal quotes, we're recommending $5,001 up to $40,000. And for the competitive bid, we're recommending anything greater than $40,000. And again, to clarify, this is not related to the CUPCA public projects. And we can come back to this slide for consideration. We'd like to show you two more slides. The next is the purchasing authority analysis. Now, this is for what the signing authority is at each level. So again, we show you what the current status is at Stanton, indexed to inflation in the next column, the average of nearby cities, and staff recommendation. Let me look at that just for a second. And then the final slide, we wanted to the earlier question, show you, okay, well, recently, what kind of council-approved contracts had come to council, but maybe under these new proposed thresholds, council wouldn't have seen? And so the ones highlighted in yellow, we ranked these by from greatest dollar amount to least, and Jason did a survey over the last couple months to gather all the various types of contracts that had come before the council. So you can see the three on the bottom would have been allowed to be signed administratively by myself. So starting with the lowest one, the community services recreation management software for 2 years at a cost of just under $24,000. Public works, I'm sure you remember the lighting replacement. We had to do that in two phases until we got the right intensity, and that was under $34,000. And then the public safety parking and citation processing software for a two-year commitment at $40,000. So just to show you the types of contracts and purchases that are made under this threshold, again, they're not complex. They're routine, they're necessary for the regular operations of the city. So we'd like to ask that the council consider, so you've heard a number of things tonight. Jason gave you some updates on things that we wanted to pull out of the current purchasing guidelines because they're already standing alone in their own separate policy, so we don't want to create confusion if we forget to update one or the other. He showed you sections that we would like to revise, and he showed you sections that we would like to update. But I think, you know, all of those, if you look at them, they're really best practice. Right, either we're clarifying to be in line with current laws or regulations. We included best practices in regards to ethics and procurement or policies and procurement. But I think really this is the crux of the discussion tonight, is where are you comfortable in terms of the threshold for procurement procedures and also your comfort level for signing authority. So that is where we'll end our formal presentation. I just want to also take this opportunity to thank Jason. He spent probably at least 40 hours on this project. He had to in-depth read our existing policy of 40 pages. We had to cross-reference against our municipal code because we did find some areas that were contradictory even between the municipal code and the policy. Then he had to draft and prepare a new 55-page document. Then he had to prepare this presentation. So he has spent countless hours on this, and I really appreciate this is a big effort for any city to go through and update their purchasing and policy guidelines. I'd also like to recommend to the council that this review happens every few years. And even if nothing ends up changing, just doing a review to make sure you're keeping up with best practices and any new changes to legislation or law. So that concludes our formal presentation, and staff is available to answer any questions.
Any consideration for, let's say, choosing a threshold and baking in the CPI so we don't fall into this?
That's certainly at the council's discretion.
The only thing that I you might want to add to this, which I think would be really good, is the level of scrutiny. I think it's important that we have a purchasing agent, who I assume it's you, Michelle, who ultimately receives and reviews everything after it's gone through at least two or three levels of a review. Now, we're a very small city, so I don't expect us to have nine people check it before it gets to you. However, there is a time frame and a protocol that we should establish so that once we do it here, it goes to here, and the final review is you. And I think we should be able to work that out to where we feel comfortable and you feel comfortable in what your final analysis is.
Yeah, just so we're all on the same understanding, whatever over-the-counter purchasing level that the council approves would be that the purchasing agent, if we're saying that that's me, I was smiling because, I mean, basically anyone, every department head would be a purchasing agent because they would be the ones with that authority for over-the-counter. So then the finance director wouldn't know what that was until it's over whatever the over-the-counter is. And then how we establish the controls after that is over-the-counter purchasing is staff is supposed to issue a purchase order to finance before they process their invoice. And so when we get that purchase order request in finance, and then ultimately the city manager up until his or her threshold are reviewing to make sure that they've followed all of the appropriate
Yeah, I think it would be remiss if we did something without that purchase order approval from you.
Yes, if I'm understanding correctly, a purchase order would only be required above the over-the-counter purchasing.
I understand that, but there still has to be checks and balances, even if it's 1 cent. You know what I'm trying to say? Even if it's just one other person, if you always have that one other person, no matter what it is, I think it protects everybody. And it makes everybody comfortable. I'm not saying that anything's ever going to go bad in the city or somebody's going to be a criminal or whatever, but it does prevent any type of negative activity in a reviewing process, and it keeps everybody thinking about our safeguards.
Yeah. Well, if you were to consider it in this factor, technically it's usually not the department head making that order of goods and services. There typically is two people involved in every purchase. Usually I would forgive Public Works as an example because they do most of the purchasing. It's usually the ordering is done at the Public Works manager or lower level. And so then ultimately when that department head, in this case the Public Works director, is approving the purchases in his or her department, he is at second check and balance it to make sure that the purchases were appropriate and reasonable for their department. So I think you can be you could have some comfort level in that over-the-counter purchasing authority or delegating to the department head that they're not usually the only person involved in the purchase of goods and services for their department. So just kind of think about that as you collaborate on what level you're comfortable with.
No, I understand that, but I'm not saying the city because we've never really ever had a problem since I've been here when the dinosaurs used to be here, but I do know that in some agencies, if two people are there's some inconsistency with two, and we don't have that third entity, then lies a problem. If you're comfortable with the system that we have because you're in charge of it, then I'm okay with that. It's usually that there is one procurement officer that overlooks everything, and I assume that's your role.
I will agree, at larger cities, there is a dedicated procurement officer, and Michelle, above the small dollar limit, does review them. I review them when they come to my level, but I can't commit to doing the level of review you're talking about unless we had additional staff.
No, I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying if it necessitates it, so. I just want you to be aware of it, because as soon as we don't talk about it,
sure,
it's going to happen. But if we talk about it and we say that we're aware of it and it could be something, it's something we'll be prepared for. That's
and we had this conversation when I first started at the city as well. Okay.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, just a very small comment. What I really love looking at in the agenda is the warrants. section of the agenda where they list out, you know, the $2 purchase that they made to buy, you know, banners or whatever, you know, like pencils, and you can see every single line item that they paid for, and it's fabulous, because then you're like, oh, I didn't realize we had to buy grocery bags for home-delivered meals from Smart and Final for $2, you know, so it's amazing. The general public has access to this, and I think as a council, we have access to this as well, so I love looking at it, and we can actually, you know, say, hey, so, you know, so-and-so department bought propane or the torch or whatever, and they list every little thing, which I absolutely love.
The city does a good job about transparency, because some cities don't actually publish their warrant register.
Yeah, so I do want to say that our city does a great job being very transparent, and as a council, I look at this every 2 weeks, and I love, if I have any questions, I can call someone.
Okay,
hey,
you're going to hate me for this, but number one, we never had that before, and that's the best thing you ever did. I agree. But number two, also, people can list they bought 60 pencils and never buy those 60 pencils. And that's, I'm sorry, but that's the reality of the world we live in. I'm not saying we're going to ever be at that level. I just want to make that awareness. It's funny because every board that I sit on, this has always become an issue, no matter what the level is. And I think the more safeguards that we're able to do under your control, the better off we'll be, that's all. I don't want to overkill it, but I think it's something that we need to keep in the back of our mind.
Absolutely. Yes. Is there a level where employees have to produce receipts for items purchased?
Employees have to produce receipts for every item purchased, whether it's $15 to pay for parking at a seminar they attend, or if they're allowed to seek lunch reimbursement at an all-day seminar for $6.78. They are technically supposed to produce a receipt for everything. Occasionally, we will have a circumstance where somebody loses a receipt. There's a separate form you have to fill out saying why you didn't produce a receipt. So there is that documentation requirement.
Because I know for our clients, not only do we invoice them, we have to produce all the receipts by.
Absolutely.
So there's your pencil issue solved.
Okay, well, is there any other comment? Because I want a closing statement. We have the best safeguard in the whole world. And he's sitting in the back corner of the room back there, Sergeant Avalos. So if we ever really have a problem, he's going to solve all our problems for us. Right? anyway, thank you very much for that. That was awesome. I'm glad that we're taking a look at this. I mean, that was like 21 years ago. Things have changed.
So if there are any more questions about the new potential threshold for signing authority that we can answer, or is the council comfortable with staff recommendations? So the next step after this is we will take your feedback tonight, and then we will actually update the purchasing policy and guidelines, bring that back to you. And we're not going to redline it because it has been hugely changed from the last version. So we will produce and attach the old version, and then we will produce and attach the new version. So that you can read both and see, and we will highlight, you know, the areas that we specifically talked about here. A lot of it is overlap, of course. We've just formatted it differently, but I haven't heard yet if there is council consensus for the proposals or if you would like to modify those.
I'm comfortable with proposals. I think they're reasonable.
I like the staff.
I like the recommendations if we add in a CPI component to it.
We're going to be reviewing this every.
Well, let's look at I see where Rigo's coming from, so maybe we can do this to satisfy everybody. We can do the CPI index addition anytime we think it necessitates it, so we don't have to wait a period of time. So maybe that would be a way to protect ourselves also.
I mean, how often is this reviewed going forward?
I would recommend every 2 to 3 years.
So you have your direction?
I do,
okay,
you.
Great. Okay, since I wore my OCFA jacket to the Halloween festival, the Sheriff's Department is now protesting. They're not going to be here tonight.
No.
and the only reason that happened was because our illustrious city manager took a sheriff's decal star and stuck it over my OCFA patch. She didn't actually do it. It was a police officer, but she took a picture and sent it to everybody. So everybody's protesting tonight. However, to make the evening okay, Sergeant, why don't you come up, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'd like to know who you are, because you've been doing a great job back there.
Wow.
Yeah, come on up. It's always good to know who's out there taking care of us, our old age, of my old age.
Oh, I apologize. That's
I was
Chief Walters told me that's who would be here. I apologize. Thank you.
How long have you been in Stanton, though?
About 11 months.
Okay, and where'd you come from?
Lacey,
okay. Well, welcome to our town. We're very happy here. You guys are doing an awesome job right now, and you can tell all your fellow deputies that. We really appreciate what you do for us. We ask you to be safe, enjoy your holiday with your family, and thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Don't forget to give me your pin, sir.
Oh yeah. Who's got a pin for him? Come on up. We got your official Stanton pin. Give it to him, Gary. Chief, while we have maybe two more minutes, why don't you come up and tell us about the charity boot collection for Christmas that's coming up? Just briefly, can you do that?
Charity boot.
Yeah, charity boot. So we know what we're going to be doing. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor, Honorable Council Members, and City Staff. So this year we're going to be, as every year we host, we get involved with Spark Love as a toy drive to help assist all the needy families out there with presents and stuff like that. So I know this year, originally we're going to do our Spark Love toy drive for this battalion division area at City of Cypress at Costco. We ran into a conflict with the parking or just in that area. So on December 10th, we've already announced it to the cities, but on December 10th, we're going to be hosting our Spark Love toy drive kickoff at the Walmart Supercenter there at the Buena Park Mall. That's going to be on December 10th, when the hours at 12:03 will be the Spark Love toy drive. We'll have a fire engineer to help collect toys and kick off for the Supercenter division. And Patricia, if you have not sent that flyer yet, I'll take care of that with this next week. No problem. So you guys can put it up on your city with the pleasure.
Thank you for that. Thanks. They tell me it's ordered. Okay, before I adjourn tonight, we have any other business? Okay. I want to let you know that tonight is our community development director's last evening with us, Jennifer Lilly. And Jennifer, I just want to say a few words, if you all will bear with me. You know, Jennifer, when you came to Stanton, this place was in turmoil. There were some things that really needed to be addressed. You stepped into, I'll just say it was a mess. And I want to let you know that your professionalism and patience and understanding really brought us out of the dark ages. A lot of the things that you created were hard for us maybe to accept because we never had the good things that you brought with you. But in the long run, the things that you did really made the city much better. A lot of the things that you brought up to date, a lot of things that you did to help our community grow, the wonderful projects that you completed, and the future that you laid for us were very important to us. I will just leave it. Myself personally want to thank you for the great job that you have done for us. You know, our loss is Riverside's gain. Stanton will always be your home. And I will tell you that you are leaving Stanton better than the day you came here. And I want to thank you personally for that. Okay. Fellow council members, I want you all to eat a lot of turkey. Public safety, would you please let everybody know that Harry's Cafe starts serving at 1 o'clock. Chief, if we have any police or fire out there that are on service, they can drop by. We'll give them a takeout plate of food or turkey. I just got the four turkey pictures of the was cooked by the culinary department of Cypress College. Now I'm going to go down and eat one of the turkeys because they look really, really good. If there's anybody you know that needs it, if you get the word out to the collaborative for me, Jenny, I appreciate it. I'll send you the flyer. Let's feed the world. Everybody enjoy your families, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks with a brand new show. Anyway, good night.